Family Chat se enteró del $5 McChicken Meal Deal, del $5 McDouble Meal Deal y del nuevo $6 Daily Double Meal Deal. Todos con papitas y bebida pequeña más McNuggets de 4 piezas. ¡Wow! ¡Qué banquete! Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. No es válido para McDelivery.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step 3, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step 4, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find Sports Grid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
And good morning. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Mish along with Joe Pizzapia as we continue our show here in the month of June, getting you ready for the upcoming seasons in basketball, baseball, hockey, and maybe even some other sports. But most importantly, want you to stay safe out there. Thank you so much for making our show part of your day. Joe, what's going on in your day today this morning? What's happening?
Well, obviously, this is a difficult time in this country that we're in. And I know we're a sports show, but I mean, we're still human beings and we're still Americans, and sure, it's still some very difficult, trying times. I'm very proud of a lot of people that I know who are out there personally having their voice heard, which is very important. And I gotta say, it's 2020 has been a year so far. I mean, we are only in June, and I feel like you and I need a vacation. I think we deserve a vacation. Problem is we can't go anywhere. So that's a problem. But I'm hoping we get some sports back. And I know everyone tuning in here is watching us because they're trying to take a break from reality. That's why it's Fantasy Sports Today, not Reality Sports Today. So, Craig, how are you doing, man? Just checking in on you, my brother. How are you?
Yeah, everything is good. You know, just kind of following along the trail here of sports, certainly. And, you know, following everything that's going on and in the world. And, you know, trying to continue to stay positive with everything that's happening, for sure. So with my mind focused mostly on sports and, you know, the return, hopefully, of baseball, it's kind of, you know, where I'm at today. But, you know, certainly there are some other things happening in sports. It looks like the NBA is kind of inching closer, Joe, to their preferred destination in Orlando, maybe a spot potentially in Disney World, and even looking at some potential hotels. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be an interesting dynamic to have the NBA potentially start up in late July, maybe even in August, and play in places essentially that, you know, people could be potentially close by. I guess that they'll have to, you know, quarantine it off and all those sort of things. But I've been to Disney, I mean, countless times, and it just seems like there's so many people there.
Well, here's a question for you, too. What is the facility like there? I mean, I think I've seen it on TV before, but this circumstance of having them all in this area, basically. What is that like? Can you speak to that at all? Do you know have any inner workings of the complex and how they might be sequestered in
Not
certain
really.
Places?
No. Okay. Not in terms of basketball, no. I mean, I really don't. So it's, kind of like your guess is as good as mine sort of thing on that.
Well, I wasn't sure because you're Florida. I know you've been down there more times than I have. So last time I was at Disney, it was a very, very expensive trip. And I remember going, there's a lot of strollers and a lot of people on wheels, a lot of kids on wheels. I'm like, this isn't super fun. Epcot, kind of fun. Magic Kingdom was not so fun. I can tell you, I needed a vacation.
It's different
from
adults and kids, that's kind of the thing.
I guess. Universal was fun. My kids were a little older, but still, I feel like that's geared towards the kids, less of the little babies and the small, little toddler type. So I think that's a little bit different in terms of a situation where you're like, oh, let's go on vacation. But as a parent, there's vacations and there's trips. And there's a big difference between the two. And sometimes you need a vacation after the trip.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely one of them. Yeah, I mean, Epcot is definitely like more of the adult scene for sure.
Yeah.
But, you can't take the kids, and not go to the Magic Kingdom.
You got to do the Magic Kingdom. I'm not saying I don't like the Animal Kingdoms. I don't want any giraffes in my car. They have that at Great Adventure in New Jersey. Do you like that? Do you like when the rhinoceros is in your sunroof? I don't understand this. To me, I don't get the appeal. I know people love animals, but I can admire animals from afar. I don't need them eating out of cups in my hand in my car. I just think there's a line. There's a line between us and them, and I think it's okay.
Well, I mean, look, you're either an animal guy or you're not. I mean, I'm not huge in the Animal Kingdom either. We went a couple different times. It was, sort of fun, but they have to be, they have to be active and they have to be around also in order for it to make it fun. So that's part of it too.
That's a very big point. I do think I put that on the brochure. Craig Bish says it's sort of fun. Come to
it's
the Animal
sort
Kingdom.
Of fun. Yeah, it's not a place that we go every single time. Sometimes we, simply skip that place. It just depends on the situation, pretty much. So, other than that, we unfortunately had a passing yesterday. Hall of Famer Wes Unseld, the former great player in the NBA, and of course the coach of the Washington Bullets for many years. And simply put, Joe, he was a really great player that I think needs to be acknowledged today. Because again, even during this tough time, certainly we've lost a great one in Wes Unseld.
Yeah, he's a mountain of a man, Wes Unseld. He felt like. I don't know, there's something kind of iconic about him, and it always felt like he was just a huge presence, not only as a player, but as a coach as well, and NBA MVP in 1969, 1978, NBA champion and finals MVP, Hall of Famer, great career there for him, and certainly a sad passing as well. It's never happy, but it's nice to look back on his life and his career and realize how much he did accomplish. And I think that's all you can do in these kind of circumstances. But when you look at some of the stats and some of the, when some of these, where he ranks and things like that, you kind of almost need to get remembered a little bit, how good Wes Unseld was. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes bad circumstances to have us talking about a player of the magnitude of Wes Unseld, but certainly one that deserves it. Do you have any Wes Unseld memories for yourself as a media person?
I remember him being just very big. That's about it.
Presence. You know what I mean? Like a man, you saw him on the bench or you saw him, you're like, that's a dude right there.
that's pretty much what I remember. And again, at a time in terms of coaching in the NBA where guys were just kind of going back and forth, it was like, it felt like in the NBA, it was the same 40 guys every year. It's like if Bill Fitch got fired, he ended up a coach somewhere else.
Right.
If Westfall was fired, he ended up a coach somewhere else. Cotton Fitzsimmons, guys just moved around a lot. Mm-hmm. Musselman, it didn't feel like any new blood was in there. And then over the last 20 years, they, of course, have changed quite a bit. So, that's sort of my take on that. But a great player nonetheless, for sure. Were you disappointed to hear that Rob Gronkowski lost his championship belt, Joe? I mean, that was a really devastating thing that happened a couple days ago.
No, and I know post-WrestleMania, I did talk about it here on the program. No, I'm not upset whatsoever that he lost that title.
I was devastated. Very upset.
I know you were. Ron Killings had a really funny promo that he cut a couple weeks ago on Rob Gronkowski talking about how he's going to get his championship back. I'm going to come after you, Tom Brady. He was saying that his whole character is kind of not the brightest bulb. So that's, he kept basically cutting a promo on Tom Brady instead of Rob Gronkowski, which was very funny. And Rob Gronkowski then cut a little promo of his own a few weeks ago. It was terrible. He did this whole stupid eyes in the back of my head thing. And he took his sunglasses off and turned them around. I was like, oh, man, that's not good. Like, somebody should have told you, Gronk, not a cool promo. Like, you don't look tough. You look kind of goofy doing this. But he doesn't care. He's Rob Gronkowski. I want the titles on the shows. That's what I want. So R-Truth, a.k.a. Ron Killings, gets the belt back, which is good. Now Rob Gronkowski can focus on other things like water sports. You know, I assume football at some point. But, you know, knowing Gronk, it's probably like third or fourth.
This was like sort of set up here because football is he's going to have to go to training camp. He's not going to really have time to defend the title. So, you know, kind of feels like that's the way it was supposed to go.
Look, you know what? Rob Gronkowski is living his best life. Is the one thing we could say about him.
That's
I have
sure.
no idea what to expect out of him after a year off. I'm not going to be drafting him. I can tell you that much. I can understand the people who are going to try to take one more shot on him. I see the tight end position being deep enough where he is right around like that 13th or 14th tight end. I'd rather take a shot on guys like Noah Fant than Rob Gronkowski. I just don't trust where Gronk is at this stage in his life and his career. But who knows? It could be it's either going to be one of the great stories ever, or it's going to completely implode, I think. I don't know if there's kind of like a mediocre Tampa Bay finish this year. I don't see that.
Could somebody have challenged Gronk as the 24/7 champion at the Buccaneers stadium?
Yes. During a game, I thought during that's where they were going with this.
Yeah,
I thought
me
at some
too.
Point
that sounded like that.
Maybe you know at some point during a game or post conference of a game, maybe that all of a sudden here comes R-Truth or somebody else pins Gronkowski right there on the media table. Next thing you know, championship changes hands. But I guess the NFL probably put a kibosh on that. It did change hands in Fox Sports Studios though. Once one of the announcers won it. I forget what the announcers were
really?
For. But yeah, it's been around, my friend, for the last couple of years. It's certainly been around. So.
All
it's
right.
not their best belt, but it's comic relief.
I mean, is there a way that he could do like a 14-7 belt, like instead of 24? Like just
no.
defend it for a lot of the day, but not the whole day?
Nope. He's got 24-7 it is. But Gronk's got a whole, I think, one-year contract with WWE, so I'm sure this is not the end of Rob Gronkowski showing up on wrestling programming. I would guarantee that that is not the end.
All right, we've seen baseball cancel international games. I'm sure you know the NBA will as well, but college football is the one that was next. They've decided to not play their game this year in Ireland. Notre Dame will play Navy, actually in Navy at their home field in Annapolis, which is kind of rare. I don't, you know, and I know that the NFL in London is obviously that was the big thing in September that obviously a lot of that had to be eliminated. But I really don't foresee any international sports here probably until there's some sort of vaccine. I can't imagine that they would even risk any kind of travel like that.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. I think international, World Cup soccer, things of that nature. I think. Until everything is settled down and until there are vaccines and more scientific medical institutions in place for COVID-19, and then you'll see things start to open up again. So it's unfortunate because I do like the globalization of the NFL. I know some people don't like it. I think it's great. I told you I've been on the London podcast a couple of times for the NFL. They love NFL football out there. They love American football. They can't get enough of it. And that was shocking to me a couple years ago. I thought it was kind of this thing that we sent over and people don't like it. They were just shoving it down their throats. The opposite. They actually have really enjoyed it. And I think the fact that it is just once a week, it's a lot easier than baseball is. You know, like it's just not culturally a thing in Europe where sports is like an everyday thing. Sports usually happens for a period of time. And then there's a little bit of a break, or you have a game and then a couple days off and whatnot. But that's why the NFL kind of works, because you can have that standalone game once a week. And I do think in our lifetime we will see a franchise in London. I think that's a lock, personally. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a possibility. I mean, I don't know, about a lock. They would have to probably start a new franchise. A lot of logistics would have to be worked out as far as playing games there, because it's quite a bit far from the West mm-hmm. Coast. But I certainly think it's a possibility. We know that they're trying to grow the game in that way, and it makes sense because they're playing so many of those games there. But right now, based on the way that the world is, it's hard to envision it. But yeah, 5-10 years down the road, certainly a possibility. It's funny, I've been making some references this week because Tiger King just kind of came and went, and it was like the hot thing for us in March and even into April, and then it was like gone. Like, it was just like everything else. It's the hot, shiny new toy, and then all of a sudden, we're not talking about it anymore. And I think in this particular case, it's funny that we have a story on the Tiger King. Yesterday was reported that Carol Baskin was granted Joe Exotic's zoo in Oklahoma. And so, Joe Ranieri and I spent a lot of time on the Tiger King, Joe, in March and even into April. This is a really big story for people who are fans of Tiger King, I got to tell you. I mean, when they do their next movie with Nicolas Cage or documentary, This is a big deal here. Jeff Lowe's got to leave the zoo.
Oh, man, let me tell you, it was little Carole Baskin news always makes you smile, I guess. But, yeah, you asked for more Tiger King, and you got it. So look at this. I thought of you immediately the first time I saw this news in the morning. So there you go. So you got a little taste yet
there
again.
It is. All right. We'll take a quick time out on Fantasy Sports Today. This day in Fantasy Sports and birthdays are coming up next. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. It's the 3rd of June, 2020, as we get you ready for the day in sports. I mean, this is just a huge day in sports history, Joe. We have all kinds of tennis, baseball, basketball. Of course, we're closing in on the Belmont Stakes for a lot of people who are into horse racing. People think the summer is slow, but there is a lot going on.
No, there absolutely is. I'm kind of happy that we're past the horse racing portion of these. Man,
oh,
I can't
we're not
write
even close. We're going right into Belmont now.
Oh, no, no. We did all this already. This was my whole life last month. I thought we were already moving past the horse race.
Oh, we're going right into it now. Stuff. Triple Crown Challenge. We're here. Ooh. Belmont Stakes.
All right. I'm going to try to pace myself here. Yeah. You like riding horses, Mish? Are you a horseback riding guy? Like, on vacation?
No, not really, but I used to be, I used to go to camp. We used to ride horses.
You went to horseback riding camp, or was it camp and there was horseback?
It was a camp and there was horseback riding.
Wow. So it was like a regular like summer camp, like a meatballs kind of summer camp kind of thing?
Yes.
Wow.
Not sleepaway camp, but.
Oh, I thought this was like a sleepaway, like camp Craigie Mishy. Or something
no,
like that.
You know what? I've never been into sleepaway camps. My kids don't even really want to go to sleepaway camps.
Well, I mean,
some people love it. So,
man, I used to go to the Williamsport baseball camp, man, sleepaway 2 weeks as a kid. It was great. 2 weeks without parents, just baseball. You're out there in the middle of Pennsylvania just playing ball every day. They feed you. They give you ping pong and pool and slushies at night and baseball cards. I mean, what more do you need? I don't know, but I don't know if sleepaway camp is still like a big thing now. Like, I feel like the world has changed a lot. I guess that's still around. I mean, your kids are a little older than mine. Is that something that like their friends still go to and stuff, like sleepaway camp?
Yeah, they definitely have them. Yeah. In upstate New York, Massachusetts. Yeah. I feel like they definitely have them.
Now look at that. Maybe you and I will go to camp. We'll have a camp outing. You and I, there's those adult sleepaway camps they do now where there's drinking and water sports and things like that. That sounds like fun. You and me, Craig Mish, what do you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've heard of those before. Yeah. They're called like booty calls, I think, Joe.
Oh, well, look, you could be my wingman. How's that?
I have to talk to the wife, see if she'll go. All right, let's get to it. All right, this day in fantasy sports history, we start off 1972. Billie Jean King wins the French Open, her only French Open victory. And of course, certainly Billie Jean King, Joe, part of, arguably some of the most controversial and best tennis that we've ever seen on the women's side, and certainly opened up the door for women's sports a lot more than anybody could have imagined.
An incredibly important figure in women's sports, incredibly important figure just in American culture. And, Billie Jean King is one of those people that way ahead of her time. You're thinking this is like the 70s into the 80s too, and she was fighting these fights. It's funny. It's good to remind ourselves, you know, sometimes these fights have to be fought and to see how far we've come and see how much work there is still to be done. But Billie Jean King, certainly one of those very important cultural figures that crosses over from the world of sports into American folklore.
Yep, no question. All right, 1980, we're getting closer to the baseball draft, so let's hit on Daryl Strawberry here. First pick overall for the Mets in 1980, and you know, certainly I would think that as a member of the Mets in 84, 85, 86, even 87, you know, his career didn't end the way that a lot of people thought it was, but when he played well for the Mets, he was pretty much an unstoppable force. He looked like he was going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it was one of the easiest swings you'll ever see, a guy that had all the talent in the world. 1986, going to Kings Plaza Mall for an autograph signing. I want to say at Walden Books or something like that, yeah. Right? My dad and I waited online. It was from like 9 to 12 or something like that. Well, Daryl didn't show up at 9 o'clock. Let's put it that way. He showed up at about 11, and he left at about 11:45. And needless to say, I did not get my stuff signed. And ever since, I've had kind of a sour taste in my mouth from the Strawberry. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, that's rough, man. I mean, that, you know, that happens a lot with athletes, too. It's like you set yourself up for fun, and it ends up being disappointing.
Well, when you're a kid, it's different. You know, like when you're a kid, you're like, oh, cool, we're going to meet Daryl Strawberry. And then you're waiting there for 3.5 hours, and then you're like, Daryl's still not here. Daryl's still not here. Oh, wait, Daryl left.
Like, the best are those people that are right outside. They're like, oh, he's going to be here in 5 minutes, 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, just wait, everybody. Yeah.
He's coming in right now. Yeah. Yeah, that's a shame.
I hold no ill regard.
No kid should have to go through that.
I know Daryl was out there having a good time, so you know, I don't hate on him, but again, disappointed, Daryl. Daryl, if you're listening and watching the show, I'd love you to sign your rookie card from 1983. That'd be nice. That's it.
All right. Right after 1980, we had a nice stretch of first round picks that we talked about actually on yesterday's show. In 1991, the Yankees draft Brian Taylor overall. And we've spent some time on Taylor earlier in the week talking about draft picks. Everyone thought that he was going to be the next great Yankee pitcher. But, of course, he got in a bar fight, and the rest is history for him.
Yeah, I mean, one of the more bizarre stories. So unfortunate. And I have the card. I know you do, too. The very coveted Brian Taylor number one draft pick card. And, gosh, did he even pitch at all in the minor leagues? He did, right?
He just wasn't the same. Yeah. Did he pitch before the incident?
I can't even remember. I mean, this is going back. Always.
I think he may have, like, very briefly. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. One of those things where, you know, like, they draft you and then you play a little A-ball or something like that at the end of the year. And then, you know, and I don't remember the timeline of him getting hurt. I just remember him being that thing. And the next thing you know, all of a sudden, boom, breaks the hand in a bar fight. And that should be a lesson, everybody out there. Don't get into fights, you know, especially with your pitching hand. Don't get into fights with your pitching hand.
No. Bad idea. 1999, the Utah Jazz get their NBA MVP in the name of Karl Malone. Of course, Malone went on to get into the Hall of Fame. Never got that coveted championship, but certainly we saw in The Last Dance just how important that was, that Karl Malone title for the Utah Jazz.
And Karl Malone, also a crossover wrestling guy, spent some time in WCW as a tag team partner. Tag team partner with Diamond Dallas Page and against Dennis Rodman and Hollywood Hogan. I was not the biggest WCW guy, but I do remember that. I don't know what you'd want to call it. It wasn't quite wrestling. It was a show, that's for sure. But
there was a few years where that was really popular, though.
Yeah, the weird crossover things. Yeah, WCW had their run in 1997, 98, and then right about 99 happened. That's when WWF at the time still kind of took over things again after that. But great player, Karl Malone. And again, unfortunately, probably would have won some titles had he not been in the Jordan era.
For sure. Interesting interview with him, by the way. I saw recently about him talking about everything.
He did get one at the end with the Lakers, though, right? Wasn't he on one of those Laker teams at the end that won? Basketball savior. Can you verify that?
They lost to Detroit.
Oh, yeah. Goodness.
I was going to say, I didn't think so. Gary Payton, too, and I don't think either of them won it. Yeah.
That's a bummer.
That's a bummer. All right, good news for Karl Malone. Oh, bad news for Karl Malone. Okay, 2018, Steph Curry hits 9 3-pointers in an NBA Finals game. This was against the Cleveland Cavaliers a couple of years ago, certainly worth mentioning. And hopefully Steph Curry is you know, healthy enough to continue the NBA season. Fantasy sports birthdays for June the 3rd. Let's start off, Joe, with Billy Cunningham, who Hall of Fame player with the Philadelphia 76ers. Little known fact is that Billy Cunningham was involved and a part owner of the Miami Heat when the Heat first came into existence. He was a part owner, and then the team got sold to Mickey Arison, who everybody knows right now. But Billy Cunningham was an original owner of the Miami Heat. He helped get the Heat into the NBA.
I did not know that. See, even I can continue to learn things here on this program. We're educating, we're entertaining, we're everything. I'm so proud of us. That's actually fascinating. I did not know that.
Yep. Hale Irwin, 1945. Hale Irwin was a very good golfer on the PGA Tour, but he made a lot of his money on the Senior Tour. He was absolutely phenomenal for about a 2 or 3 year period. He won like every single one of those tournaments. And so there was two kind of levels of golf, Joe, at that time. It was, hey, look, you can play on the PGA Tour, but don't forget, when you're done, even if you're not very good on the regular tour, you head over to the seniors and dominate. That's what Hale Irwin did for a long time.
Yeah, I wish I had more to contribute between Billy Cunningham and Hale Irwin. You know, those some days where you're like, well, this is not the easiest birthday day. This is that day for me. I'm basically kind of at the mercy of your tidbits here on these people, because, I mean, I could tell you a little bit about the next guy, but you know, it's not my sport, unfortunately. It's just not. I like to play, not very good at it, but I like it.
All right, fair enough. 1986, Rafael Nadal, one of the great tennis players in the last 20 years, ironically amazing in the French Open on the clay, still pretty good everywhere else, but for some reason it's so strange that you know, in all sports you have, you know, certainly in football, it's always, you know, a 50-yard field. In baseball, the fields and dimensions are different. And tennis, you're essentially playing on all the same surface, more or less. It's either grass or it's the hard court. But the French Open poses always something so interesting because of the clay and, you know, the sliding back and forth. And for whatever reason, this was Nadal's niche, and he won multiple French Opens.
I'm a city kid, so I've only ever played on the hard courts. Have you ever played on clay or grass court at all?
I'm trying to think.
I don't think I've ever seen one.
It's possible. It's not clay, but it's possible. I think there's a chance that I have. In Bradenton, maybe, where they have the tennis academy there. I used to play there. So
you see, my problem younger when I was ever trying to, you know, play. My dad loved tennis, so he would want to go out and play tennis sometimes, and I would always go hear him because I'm good for anything there. Yeah, let's go out and play some tennis. Sure, it sounds fun. Just want to hang out with dad anyway. And I just, you know, no good, because I always wanted to, you know, baseball swing the tennis ball. Not a good look. A lot of outs, a lot of things, a lot different.
But anyway, thanks for that contribution there. All right.
I told you, I got nothing today. I got nothing.
Really? I mean,
it's a show about nothing.
1986, and here is the photo that's pictured. Al Horford, who ended up winning an NBA, a college basketball championship with the Florida Gators, played on some great teams with them. And then has really carved out a great career in the NBA. You know, the one thing about the NBA is that, yeah, I mean, some of the guys who are under 6'8", 6'7", when they lose that step, it's really hard for them to keep up. But the big guys can continue to play, and Al Horford has.
Yeah. Also born in the Dominican Republic. A lot of people don't realize that about Al Horford. So, look, I think you nailed it there with him. And obviously a guy at the age of 33 now. Still going out there and going strong, which you got to respect to anybody still out there and, you know, going and continuing to play the game that they love. How many years do you think Al Horford has left?
Not many, probably one or two. But he's had a really long career, I think more longer than people would have expected. So hats off to him. And then 1994, not a great baseball day for birthdays, unfortunately, today. There's some 80s guys, I think, that people would have not heard of, so we didn't include them. So sorry, 80s. But Harrison Bader, born in 1994, he's, you know, kind of along the long lines of St. Louis Cardinals, Joe, that, you know, come up and you don't really know a lot about them. They start off like a house on fire, and then all of a sudden they just sort of slow down. So it's kind of strange how that happens. But the Cardinals are always able to find – the pitching prospects end up sticking, but a lot of times they're hitters. They come up, they show a lot, and then you're like, wow, this guy's going to be great. And even they sign extensions with some of these guys too. But – you know, Bader kind of fits that category, I think.
Yeah, Grichuk, Piscotty, just to name a couple, and they've got a couple other guys right there. I'm hoping that Carlson breaks that mold, but we shall see.
Yeah. All right, those are our birthdays for today. We'll take a quick time out here on the show. Joe and I will be right back. Make sure you like and subscribe to our show on YouTube. Set your notifications to on. We're back with more Sports Grid right after this. Don't go away.
We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back. Craig and Joe here back with you as we get ready for the Major League Baseball draft coming up 1 week from today. And certainly we'll have some coverage of it here on Sports Grid. It does affect fantasy. Certainly we're going to see some of tomorrow's players get drafted. And my podcast, Swings and Misses, I had the Marlins Director of Amateur Scouting, DJ Svilek, on that show. Those of you who are interested in sort of the Marlins perspective as to what they may do, they pick third overall. You can check that over on iTunes. But certainly, Joe, as we talk about the draft, and we're going to take a look at another division in baseball and the history point of view, it's such a mixed bag for baseball. And it really made me happy to hear DJ Svilek say that the Marlins, in particular, fought for 10 rounds in this upcoming draft because, you know, simply put, they didn't believe that five was enough. And I wish that more teams would have fought harder, but it just simply isn't as important to some teams. You would think it would be, but more important to the teams that really need to build through the draft as opposed to a team like the Yankees or the Red Sox or another team that could just go out and buy a player.
Yeah, well, this is also the beginning of the stripping down of minor league baseball. They're taking advantage of a scenario, the owners, and I can understand why they are. I know we got into it yesterday a little bit. I do believe that there's some redundancies in minor league baseball of several different A ball classes and things like that, that maybe we can get to an A ball, a double A, and a triple A. And I think that that is enough at this point. There's also independent league baseball. There's so many other avenues now, and college baseball has really come on in the last 10, 15 years and really high end level instruction, high end level player development there, where these kids are getting to the major leagues and cracking in 2 years sometimes or even less. So I think that's part of this. Now, what is it going to go all the way back to 40? Was it 40 rounds, right? That was originally?
It depends on, I mean, it's 35, 40 rounds.
But so, I mean, if you can get back into the high 20s, I think that is, that's something that the MLBPA will be happy with. I'm surprised.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but
I don't think so either. But man, it's crazy to think it's all the way down to, you know, five. Like that's kind of, it's almost absurd, the number. I mean, that's the thing. And I get it's a weird year, and I get there's not going to be a lot of cuts and evaluations of players and talent and things like that. But hold your hats, because if you're a dynasty league owner, he's going to get wacky in the minor leagues in the next 2 years with the labor union agreement.
Yeah, I don't think that you'll feel it now. I think that it'll be something that you feel in a couple of years. And really, the reasoning for the cutting of the draft, Joe, is really has nothing to do with the scouting. I mean, a lot of the scouting is already done. You're just putting your final development together in March, April, and May. I mean, you already know what you know about the players. You got to start a year in advance. It's a really intriguing dynamic as to what's going to happen. Especially next week, one other element of the discussion that is certainly interesting is that after the fifth round is over, there's going to be this brawl for all of the other kids who didn't get drafted. And I thought that it was going to be sort of like the NFL draft, where teams are going to be on the phone and just trying to convince the kids. And I think that there is an element of that that's going to stay and going to be involved in baseball this year. But it's more so, it's not convincing them to sign with a specific team. It's convincing them to sign at all. Because what really is $20,000 to any of these kids?
Well, I mean, it's the opportunity. it's an opportunity to get in an organization. That I think that's what they look at it. It's the opportunity. Do you want to take the shot of trying to get in an organization and trust your talent? I think that's what it comes down to. That's about it.
Not in high school.
No, in high school, I don't think. I think you're going to have some fantastic college baseball next year because you're going to have a lot of the high school kids
go into college. A lot.
The winner's college baseball.
Opportunity and competition. I mean, that's going to be.
The winner is the College World Series in all this. That's the winner. I think we could say that. And we're going through some of the winners in Major League Baseball history, some of the best drafts for every single team. And yesterday we did the East of the American and National League, and today we're going to do the Central. And today, Craig, we're going to start with the Kansas City Royals, who, just like Mike Schmidt and the Phillies, second round is where you get George Brett. Not a first-round pick, ladies and gentlemen. So every team passed on George Brett, and then the Kansas City Royals took him in the second round. But he wasn't the only guy that they took. They also took Mark Littell and Steve Busby, who were contributors to those teams. We're talking about some guys with some all-star appearances. We're talking about Littell, who's a reliever in a four-year run with the Royals and the Cardinals, saved 52 games over that span. And also Busby was another guy who was able to contribute. Also in the June supplemental draft, they got John Woffin, who actually later on became a manager. But it's all about getting that primetime all-time great player. George Brett was transformative for the Kansas City Royals. And I mean, I know they had their run a few years ago back in 14 and 15, but at the same time, those Kansas City Royal teams with George Brett were about as good as it gets. And they were just going there every year, fighting the Yankees, fighting the Phillies, fighting some big time teams. So you could say 1971 was probably the best draft for the Royals.
Yeah. I mean, having Brett alone was great. I mean, Busby, I had heard of, I don't know a lot about Mark Littell, but certainly I can recognize how good that draft was. And look, the Royals, even through the years into the 80s, into the 90s, they did a really good job. They're basically rebuilding through their drafts right now. It's taking a little bit more time probably than they would have wanted to. But Kansas City is never going to be a big market ball club, and this is the way that they did it, and this is the way that they're going to have to do it.
Yeah, and I remember Alex Gordon was supposed to be the next George Brett. I remember when that was coming through, and he never quite became that. He was a very good player, but a big contributor to those teams in 14 and 15.
Absolutely.
With Osberg, Moustakas, and Lorenzo Cain.
All homegrown players there.
Yeah, and those players were fun to watch. It was an old school brand of baseball they played. They were not just trying to hit home runs. They were moving guys over and kind of playing National League baseball in the American League, which is something a lot of people weren't prepared for. But it was successful for that run there for a couple years until money crept in and they couldn't afford anybody, and then they had to blow it up. 1976 draft for the Detroit Tigers, you could say, was their best one. Get this. Hall of Famers, Alan Trammell and Jack Morris. Trammell in the second round, Morris in the fifth. Right-hander Dan Petrie also in that draft, as well as outfielder Steve Kemp. But we're talking about, obviously, whenever you can get a Hall of Fame shortstop and a Hall of Fame pitcher in the same draft. Morris was taken in the fifth round, Trammell in the second. 10 all-star appearances between them, plus we all know 1984, that World Series. So when you can get not one but two Hall of Famers in the same draft, that is a stunning achievement, I think, by any scouting department.
Yep, and Lou Whitaker, shortly either before or after that, I mean, it had to have been right around the same time, I'm guessing.
But shortly after, I believe. I'm almost positive.
Whitaker more or less played around the same time. And look, those Tigers teams are finally getting recognized now. Trammell, not a Hall of Famer, now he is. Morris, not a Hall of Famer initially, now he is. And then the last one is Lou Whitaker, and how he's not in the Hall of Fame is really unclear. I'm not sure, but I do think that he'll eventually get in as well.
Yeah, and fun fact, they were unable to sign their seventh round choice that year, young shortstop by the name of Ozzie Smith. So could you imagine that draft if it had been Ozzie Smith, Alan Trammell, and Jack Morris? That's quite a haul right there. I don't know who would end up playing shortstop. Then Lou Whitaker, then following years. I don't know how that would have worked out. But still, they did draft Ozzie Smith. They didn't sign him. But that's some pretty good scouting right there from the Detroit Tigers. Yeah. They could use some help with that right now. They are in desperate need of some young position talent over there. Whew. I know they got some pitchers coming through the pipeline.
Yeah, it's going to be years for them.
Yeah,
it's going to be a long time. Riley Green. It's going to be some time for them for sure.
All right. Well, 1989 looks like the best year potentially for the Cleveland Indians in terms of their drafting. And you can ask, well, why is that? Well, how about some value? How about the value of a 13th round selection from Illinois Central Junior College, shortstop at the time with the High Sox, Jim Thome? How about that? When you get a 13th round selection there, that's pretty good. Also, in the 17th round, they took a guy named Brian Giles, who turned out to be a pretty darn good player too, obviously more or less with the Pittsburgh Pirates, but still, that's a pretty good draft right there. Jim Thome in the 13th round. It's always shocking to me when you get Hall of Famers that last that long, and Jim Thome, one of the great power hitters in the steroid era, and, you know, most people look at him as a very legitimate power hitter. He is part of the 500 home run club, correct? I'm not misspeaking there. I remember him getting to that.
I remember a little bit of third base for him.
Third base is where I saw Jim Thome play in person one summer in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, because the Mets affiliate AA was there. So I got to see Jeremy Burnitz, DJ Dozier, and some guy that I thought's name was Thome, who had the high socks. And I was like, I like this guy Thome with the high socks. This guy mashes, man. This guy's going to be good. I didn't know how to pronounce his name, obviously, at the time, and neither did the announcer at the ballpark. So it looks like Thome. So you said Thome. But I remember the high socks, and I remember this guy just absolutely just crushing balls during the game. So let's move on to the Minnesota Twins here. 1989, pretty good year. First round pick for them, Chuck Knobloch. And I know Yankee fans want to make Chuck Knobloch jokes, but Chuck Knobloch was a pretty good player, including Rookie of the Year Award in 1991. People forget. In the fourth round, they had Scott Erickson in that draft as well. They also drafted Marty Cordova, who ended up being a pretty solid contributor for them, and Mike Trombley. So Erickson had some really good years for the Twins. So did Knobloch in that kind of remake of the Minnesota Twins. The Kirby Puckett-ish era, as we kind of turned the page into the Torrey Hunter era and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and Knobloch was a really underrated player for a long time. Everyone unfortunately remembers him for not being able to throw to first base, but he was a fantastic hitter with the Twins. And look, New York is not for everyone, and I think that Knobloch was probably one of those guys. Had he stayed in Minnesota or went somewhere else, we could be talking about a guy with 2,000, 2,500 hits, but certainly a really good player at his time, no question, and really good with the Twins
too. And for the White Sox, finally, 1990, I think you could say it was the best draft just from a bulk standpoint. A lot of guys that played in the big leagues. Ray Durham was their fifth-round pick. He was a pretty good second baseman for them for a few years. Alex Fernandez was their first pick, number four overall. Certainly for a few years there, he was their ace. Bob Wickman in that draft, and James Baldwin as well. Also righty Jason Barre, who pitched for a few years as well. So, I mean, you could argue the 1970 draft with Goose Gossage and Bucky Dent. You could argue 1998 with Mark Burley and Aaron Rowand. But I don't know. I think when you're talking about Alex Fernandez, Ray Durham, I remember all those guys coming up and playing. And I think when you're an organization, what you're looking for in the draft is, can we draft major leaguers? Are these guys going to contribute at the major league level? And I think if you can hit in one draft on two or three, let alone four or five, I think that's the best draft of your organization, unless you're drafting George Brett or Mike Schmidt or all-time great players.
Yeah, well, the White Sox, people forget, ended up winning a World Series with a lot of draft picks. They're like the one team in the last 20 years that people forget actually won that thing many years ago. But look, when you're taking players like this and hitting on so many of these players during this time, I think it's pretty obvious why they ended up winning. But, Ray Durham, a very underrated player.
Yes.
For a long time there. Bob Wickman actually was a pretty good closer for a short period of time as well. And Barre made a lot of starts. So no argument with that. And Alex Fernandez, too, ended up winning a World Series. Not with them, but with the with the Marlins. And look, when Alex Fernandez started pitching, everyone thought he was a bona fide Hall of Famer too, but unfortunately had a lot of injuries that derailed his career.
Yeah, unfortunately. But that's the AL Central, and that's how she wrote. And again, the draft is not an exact science, but I know coming up next, we'll be looking at the National League Central version, and I'm excited for this one. There's some good names here, and that one coming up as well.
All right, so we'll hit on that next, and then we'll head on over to some NFL props, courtesy of the DraftKings Sportsbook. Actually, we're going to switch on over to DraftKings, so stay tuned. More fantasy sports today coming your way right after the break. You're watching Craig and Joe. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back. Craig and Joe here with you. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to get back into our discussion of some NFL props, over-unders in the NFL. You may be surprised with a couple of the players that we're going to dive into today, so stick around. That's coming up next. Joe and I have been focused a lot on the June draft. It's coming up next week, June the 10th. It'll be five rounds for Major League Baseball. Unfortunately, for a lot of the kids out there who had success, some of them may not be taken this year, and it's really unfortunate when you look at it because there are a lot of players that are going to be taken, specifically in this draft, that, you know, if they would have slipped, they wouldn't have been taken at all. And you look in the past, you look at history, Joe, and one of the best players in the history of baseball, in Albert Pujols, was taken nowhere near the first five rounds of his draft.
Somebody is going to get an undrafted free agent Hall of Famer this year. I think it's safe to say.
$20,000.
That's for $20,000. And
a shot of that, for sure.
I don't know who that's going to be, but it's going to be somebody because that's the nature of this beast. I mean, we've seen Hall of Famers go very late. You mentioned Pujols. We'll talk about him in a second here. But it happens all the time anyway. And now we're talking about it's not just right, except for the Mets. Well done, Brett. Well done. Yeah, the Mets are not going to do it. They're not. That's not going to happen. But what is going to happen?
They traded their draft pick from a couple years ago.
Right. Well, what is going to happen is it's going to be the wild, wild west, though, because now that basically scouting departments can go after whoever they want after these drafts are over, it's going to be fascinating how many teams are super aggressive on that market. Is this an opportunity, I guess, maybe this is a big meta question, for some of these small market teams to really kind of stockpile or restock? We just talked about the Tigers as a team you said is a couple years away. Is this an opportunity for them to kind of be really aggressive and try their best to convince and bring in, I know it's only $20,000, but some of this raw talent and see if they can hit on a couple people?
Well, I mean, the Tigers do. So, yeah. You know, hopefully for them. But I think it goes without saying that we're headed down a path with this draft and with the minor leagues. It's a very big unknown. And as unclear as this whole baseball season has been, the minor leagues are even more unclear. So we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Yes, one thing at a time. But we can see how the Reds draft played out, especially the best one. 1965, it was actually the first pick in the first ever draft, but it wasn't Johnny Bench. He did go in the second round to the Reds. Again, another Hall of Famer. It seems like the second round, that's the sweet spot. George Brett, Mike Schmidt, Johnny Bench. I mean, those are three of the best players that ever played the game at their respective position. All second round picks. Even Cal Ripken, right? We talked about him.
Right.
Second round pick yesterday. We talked. What's going on, man? I want to be. We should all pay attention to the second round. Forget the first round. Second round is where it's at. The first pick, I don't know if you know who this was, but it was Bernie Carbo, who, of course, later had some moments there that for the Red Sox, I believe, right? Bernie Carbo ended up playing on the other end of the 75 World Series against the Reds. Also, Hal McCray was part of this draft as well, but even though his best years were with the Royals, he did contribute to the Big Red Machine. However, 1965, Johnny Bench, a guy that revolutionized catching, also revolutionized the glove of a catcher. That single-hinged glove was something that did not come around until Johnny Bench, and basically was the prototype for the hitting, slugging catcher that we kind of see today.
Yeah, and look, Johnny Bench and what he did for catching is just incredible. Mm-hmm. The way that he was able to just, you know, receive the ball, you know, changed the way that a lot of catchers did. And look, he was good throwing out guys as well, but as a receiver, that's where he really began. And we didn't start even looking at pitch framing until the late 90s into the 2000s, but he was, you know, somebody like Yadier Molina who really, you know, perfected that.
Yeah. Let's move on to the Cubs here in 1984. And Chicago, they had the number three overall pick. They took a guy from
a lot of failed
Morehead
picks
State,
on the Cubs, that's for sure.
Left-hander Drew Hall, but that didn't work out. But lucky for them, they did take a couple other pitchers in this draft. One of them was a Nevada high school pitcher named Greg Maddux. They took in the second round. There's a trend here, boys and girls. And a lefty from St. Joseph's named Jamie Moyer. Now, between Greg Maddux and Jamie Moyer, they had 624 major league wins. That is pretty incredible when you think about it. 161 of those were for the Cubs. But I think when you look back, you could say that is a pretty incredible draft. Now, 84, 85 back-to-back years, they did draft Rafael Palmeiro and Mark Grace, so that's pretty good as well. But, I mean, Greg Maddux, second round again, and Jamie Moyer, who went on to pitch forever. He might still be pitching right now. Nobody told him that there's no baseball. He's out there on a mound somewhere still pitching. But that's a pretty good one in 1984 for the Cubs. You think the Cubs would have had a different path if they had been able to hang on to Greg Maddux?
I mean, I don't think so. I think that, look, this was a good draft that you found, but in general, they did not do well in the draft through the years. Many, many years of poorly drafting players, and certainly you could look through hundreds of players and pick out a few, but they just they didn't do a good job with scouting. They didn't do a good job with development, and this even went on in the 90s and in the 2000s, really, until Jim Hendry there, of course, but, you know, Theo Epstein took over and looking for a different sort of player. But they were always taking these toolsy type guys. Everyone always wanted to make a Cubs prospect good, if you remember, too, and that almost was never the case.
Yeah, again, the other one you could make a case for, 85, Palmeiro and Mark Grace, pretty good. You know, I can't remember who they traded Palmeiro for off the top of my head. But I remember as a kid going, wow, I can't believe they traded Rafael Palmeiro. He seemed like he was going to be a really good player. And I can't remember who the piece was that they thought was going. It was one of those moments there. It is a little trivia maybe you or Brett could help me with. But for the life of me, off the top of my head, as we're sitting here, couldn't figure it out. I know we're going to move on in a second here. But if you get the name, let me know. The Pirates, 1985 draft, pretty darn good. Top four picks that year all went on to successful big league careers, highlighted by Barry Larkin. But the number five overall pick was Kurt Brown. Never made it to the big leagues. And then the Pirates drafted Barry Bonds out of Arizona State. So obviously Barry Bonds.
That's, well, job well done. Very easy.
Yeah. Yeah. But obviously Barry Bonds, we know there. WAR is 50.3 for his career. Actually, no, with the Pirates, his WAR was 50.3. Pardon me. Two NL MVPs with the Pirates before, obviously, those incredible years with San Francisco. Say what you will. I know everybody always thinks of him as a San Francisco Giant, but I remember Barry Bonds far too well as a Met fan growing up in the early 90s, just pounding on the New York Mets. Him and Bonilla and that whole team with Spanky, Mike LaValliere, and Felix Vermeen and Jose Leand and all those guys. So Barry Bonds doesn't get better than that. Did you find the name for Palmeiro?
Yeah, it was Mitch Williams was the main guy
it
in the deal.
Mitch Williams, that's right, from Texas. That's who it was.
I guess, I mean, look, at the time, they really, you know, emphasized the closer position. So I guess that was, I suppose that that was part of it. But of course, Mitch Williams, even from the Cubs, you know, he went on to have great years in Philadelphia, too. So, you know, really good pitcher. But
yeah, but not the position player that Rafael Palmeiro turned out to be. That's for sure.
That would be the case. For sure.
And it was tough, too, because he was kind of playing out of position there because Grace was at first. So he had kind of stuck him in the outfield and they didn't know what to do with him. And I guess the rest is history, as they say. Let's go on to the Brewers and 1986. These two guys were pretty good. One of them is a borderline Hall of Famer. Unfortunately, neither of these guys really had a lot of great moments with this team. It's the 1986 Brewers draft, and they took Gary Sheffield with the number six overall pick, followed by Greg Vaughn later on in the secondary phase of the draft. So Greg Vaughn, people forget, that was a legit power bat. This is a guy who hit 50 bombs one year for the Padres, an incredible power hitter, had so many injuries, so much trouble staying on the field. But it's amazing to imagine if Gary Sheffield and Greg Vaughn had really stuck together on the Brewers and played up to expectations when they were in Milwaukee, how different those years for the Brewers would have been in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I was a big Greg Vaughn fan. I think I probably have a lot of his rookie cards somewhere.
Oh, future star Greg Vaughn. You remember that one with the stripe going under the top?
I mean, what was not to like about that guy? 30 home runs? I mean, look, Gary Sheffield ended up having a wonderful career. It's just that, you know, he moved around so much. And yeah, I mean, the Brewers really just, for whatever reason, didn't like him or didn't want to put up with him. But he was, almost a triple crown winner with the Padres. He was great.
Well, also Sheffield started out as shortstop, then third baseman. Yep. Had a lot of trouble throwing the ball to first base. If you recall, there was a lot. That was the problem with Sheffield. He didn't want to move off the positions, but he kept throwing the balls in the stands. that was not endearing.
Can't do that. I heard he can't do that.
And eventually he does move into the outfield, and he becomes the kind of player that we've seen. Also in that draft, by the way, in the 11th round, Darrell Hamilton, who was a pretty good player for the Brewers and for the Mets and a few other franchises. I always liked Darrell Hamilton. He was kind of a role-playing outfielder, but still a guy that you can really, kind of plug in there, professional baseball player. Little shout-out for Darrell Hamilton. And that brings us to the St. Louis Cardinals, 1999, Albert Pujols. He's now 40 years old. He's entering his 20th big league season, still going strong. Got a career 300, 379, 549 slash with, I mean, that's that's pretty darn good right there. That's doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, and really, you know, for fantasy sort of, you know, in that online fantasy baseball era, became the perennial first pick overall in the draft, and really is one of those very few guys that I'll remember in fantasy and in reality that came out of nowhere. Like, he basically, you know, Tony La Russa one spring training essentially before the season said he's going to be a Hall of Famer before he ever played a game, and people were like, what in the world is this guy talking about? And he was. Like, I mean, in this day and age where we know about every single prospect that comes up to the big leagues before they hit, like, there is one there's a Max Muncy, and then there's 500 guys that we knew about. Like, Muncy was a guy we didn't know about. Pujols is in that category of it just happened for him.
And we didn't know about, and now he's sitting on, and he's sitting on 656 home runs. I mean, just take that in
700.
Just take that in for a second. The guy has 656 home runs and 3,200 hits. I mean, I actually had to stop and kind of do a double take and say, is that really what Pujols has had for all these years?
Yeah.
Those are incredible numbers. I mean, the guy was the best hitter in baseball. He's must-see at-bats for those years in St. Louis. And I think everybody knew when he signed that contract for the Angels that it was going to get ugly at the end. It got uglier in the middle, unfortunately, I think, that people wanted to realize. But look, I mean, when all is said and done, 656 home runs for a 13th round selection with 3,202 hits. This is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Who's the guy who's not going to vote for Albert Pujols? That's who I want to know. Also in this draft in 99 for the Cardinals, Coco Crisp. Not a bad little player as well. Coco had some good years for the A's and for a couple other teams as well. But
yeah, they didn't hang on to him.
Yeah, 15-year career for Coco. Not too shabby there. I think the Indians, probably some good damage there. But Albert Pujols, 13th round. Man, that's a pretty good draft.
He's going to end up playing longer for the Angels than he did for the Cardinals. I mean, unthinkable, but it's true.
Well, he's still a Cardinal in the Hall of Fame. Sorry. I mean, that's not even close, right? World Series titles.
Of course it's not even close, but it's ironic that
it is ironic.
The majority of his career is going to be spent there.
I never even thought about that.
It's like your guy Adam Vinatieri.
Yeah. Well,
and he's a Colt.
Well,
I mean, really? He's spend more time with the Colts. That's crazy. All right. We'll take a quick timeout on fantasy sports today. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.